No taxation without representation. 200 years of exploitation in the capital of this nation. No representation in the capital of this nation. 200 years of exploitation. Give the people their right to vote.
Someone asked me, was it true? The voting rights of the district were long overdue.
That was Sweet Honey in the Rock with Give the People Their Right to Vote. Hello and welcome to Shadow Politics, an hour-long grassroots talk show which will attempt to shine a light on the issues that you care about. I'm your host, United States Senator Michael D. Brown, coming to you live from the District of Columbia, America's last colony, along with my co-host, Maria Sanchez, I'm sorry, we hope our show will start a dialogue with America about the issues that are important to you and affect the lives of all of us. So join in the discussion by calling in at 888-627-6008, or you can Skype your questions to BBSRADIOONE. Tonight, we have a very special guest to talk about our favorite subject, D.C. statehood. In fact, we have two special guests, my longstanding former co-host Kathleen Gomez and Mark Plotkin, political commentator, analyst, expert on the politics, especially on Capitol Hill, of statehood. So we're lucky to have Mark with us tonight, and we're going to talk about the mayor's plan and how things are going. Mark, welcome to the show.
For all your efforts. I know it seems lonely, but you're doing the right thing, and in the end, justice will prevail, and the 670,000 residents of the District of Columbia will become first-class American citizens when we get statehood.
Yeah, I think you're right about that, Mark. I think it's, you know, that the battle has turned to, and you've been involved in it as long as anybody I know, has changed from if to when. But the when is still a big question. So let's start there. What do you think of the mayor's new plan?
I'm going to be brutally honest and candid. I think that's why you asked me to be on the show, and I'm not speaking always out of emotion or opinion, but I'm speaking armed with facts. Muriel Bowser, as a city council member, was not in any way identified with this issue, not one bit. She got elected because she was not Vincent C. Gray, who was under suspicion and was not indicted and not fully charged, but she was really a person, a political figure, that was a professional protege. I'm not being ugly, or I'm not trying to diminish her. That's exactly what she was. She was the protege of the predecessor Adrian Fenty, and she really wasn't identified with any issue, let alone statehood. All of a sudden, she comes up with some newfound passion. I'll consider that sincere, and there is going to be a issue, an advisory referendum on the ballot in November, has to do with ratifying a statehood constitution. I won't go into the whole thing, but I want to abbreviate the conversation and let you ask some questions by saying this is not a vote on statehood. The vote on statehood has to take place in the House and the Senate and the signature of the President of the United States. It's like a bill. There's been one vote in statehood. It was in November of 1993. I was there. 153 Democrats voted for it. There has never been a vote in the Senate. Senator Carper introduced a bill and didn't even move his own bill in the year 2014. So, yes, I think the citizens will vote for the Constitution. I think, yes, they will show that they're for statehood. But the serious and real dedicated work has to occur with a vote in the U.S. House, a vote in the U.S. Senate, and presidential leadership. And let's see if Hillary Clinton is serious about her support for statehood and whether actually it works, she really works the bill. This president, for 8 years, Barack Obama, has ignored us, taken us for granted, and not been our champion. We need presidential leadership, and we also need leadership in the Senate with the new majority leader, if that should be Chuck Schumer. The two people who have been steadfast in the House have been Nancy Pelosi and Steny Hoyer, and Congresswoman Norton has really been an enabler of inaction, an enabler of not even speaking to the senators when they were supposed to move a bill, and it'll be far better when she's no longer the voting delegate. I can't mince words about that. She's actually worked against the issue of statehood.
All right, well, this is, hi, this is Kathleen. How are you doing? I have to come in and come into this conversation because, while what you said, I agree with you, and you did say that, you know, you believe that most citizens will vote for this. My issue is that how do you do something that's so big as statehood? And my feeling about Mario Bowser is she was never on statehood. And the city council is not on statehood. But when they hear the rumblings of the grassroots and of the citizens and start seeing D.C. flags everywhere and start noticing that people young people are starting to carry this cause, all of a sudden they see the train, you know, is at the platform. It starts to maybe get steam. It's rolling out. All of a sudden they become big pro-statehood people. To me, you do not make an effort like this on 6 months. You rewrite a constitution. You have no money that is budgeted for get out the vote, educating the public on what this ballot is going to say and how you need to vote for it to make it pass, what it means. I mean, I know there's one, Senator Brown was telling me about it, where you have to agree to the borders, and who's going to know what that means? I think that this is really, so she can say, I'm for statehood. What are you talking about? The people, the activists, the commission failed, and I did my best. You don't do your best when you don't give it time, you don't give it money, and that's what my biggest problem is. I don't understand how anything, if you don't put money towards it, is going to be successful. Something like this needs to have a budget. You need to have, you know, if you got to pay Jackson, who was your first, shadow senator, why isn't, you know, Jackson out there saying, this is something that's got to be done now that we have it on the ballot. Let's all go in there, everybody who's involved in statehood, and let's push this. Let's get it on TV. Let's get it on the air. Let's get it on Twitter, on Facebook, on everything, social media, pushing for this and educating everyone. I don't see that. To me, I think this is just crappy way of saying, well, I made a crappy effort because I don't believe in it because I didn't put any money behind it.
Well, I couldn't agree with you more. I'm going to vote for it just because I don't want to retard or stop the movement, but it is a bit of a charade, and I don't want it to be interpreted as that people weren't for statehood. I don't think they'll know what they're voting for. The serious work has to be done. In 1993, there was a House vote. There were 60 Democratic senators, or 58, almost filibuster, 258 House Democrats. And Eleanor Holmes Norton, when the vote was taken, is defined defeat as victory. We got 153 votes. One Republican, Wayne Gilchrist, was a profound courage and voted for it. There was no vote in the Senate. John Glenn, who's still living, who everybody thinks is an American hero, made sure that it never got out of committee. Then in 2014, Tom Carper of Delaware, when I asked Eleanor Holmes Norton, have you talked to the other Democratic senators? They were in the majority. She said to me, you talk to them. So I'm not so concerned about November. What I'm concerned about much more is the lack of effort in the U.S. Congress where the vote actually has to be taken. When Bowser went to see Carper in a courtesy visit, I said, have you asked him about the statehood bill? She said it didn't come up. Well, that's crazy. So this is a bit of a charade. I realize the what happens in life. There are sort of ambiguities to things. I'm going to vote for the referendum, but the point of it is the serious, legitimate, honest work has to be done when there's a bill in both the House and the Senate. That's where the serious effort has to take place.
Let me ask you, well, when you talk about it passing, though, November, is somebody, is there just one box you have to fill out, or do you have to fill out more than one box?
No, you just say yes or no, and that, go ahead, Michael.
No, no, that's fine, Mark. You're right. There's one box. You say yes or no.
There's one box. So, but there's 4 points to this vote, right? You have to,
there's wording, and I think people will interpret it. Are you for statehood? Vote yes. And I'm going to be primitive and simplistic and just vote yes so that the vote is not interpreted as a vote against statehood. All this can be worked out later. It's not a perfect situation, and it's a symbolic vote. It's an advisory referendum, but we don't need somebody saying no on statehood, even with all its imperfections. I'm just saying, let's not lose our eye on the prize. The prize has to be actually voted in the House and the Senate. This Constitution can actually be amended, and Michael Brown has made that case before. It is a very imperfect document, but what the elected officials should be forced to do is go up and lobby the bill and make sure that the president, besides just writing a column in the Washington Informer, actually feels that they're going to move the bill. Let me turn around and ask Michael Brown. You were a superdelegate. You had a conversation with Hillary Clinton. Why don't you let the people know about that conversation and what happened?
Well, I actually had a conversation not only with her but also with Bernie Sanders. And in both cases, they said they were they would support our initiative. And actually, Hillary Clinton said, of course, that, you know, I will work towards statehood. Bernie Sanders was an original. I mean, he co-sponsored the latest iteration of the statehood
Hillary Clinton
bill.
When she was in the Senate, Michael was one of the original four co-sponsors. Everybody says they're for it. Hillary Clinton had an opportunity when she said to expand voting rights. You were at the convention, so was I, in Philadelphia. Why didn't she say, and I mean the District of Columbia? Everybody is oratorically
for the
bill, but they won't work the bill. They won't make sure it moves in the legislative process.
Okay, let me ask you this. As someone from the outside, someone looking at this from the outside, I'm looking at no budget. I don't see anything when I'm in D.C. as a public ad to get out the vote, to make sure everyone goes out and votes. Yes, it's an election, but, you know, is it going to be overshadowed? I still think that you have to put some money and effort to get out the vote and make the referendum understood among people, because I think a lot of people, they don't get it, they don't know, they may not vote for it because they're not sure what they're voting for. So let me just
ask. No, you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. I mean, there's no doubt about that. This has been sort of torpedoed or engineered, and it's supposed to be interpreted as action toward voting. And but I don't want a no vote. It's going to be on the ballot.
I understand what you're saying.
I think there'll be an effort to educate people. I think they'll be confused, and the no vote will be probably larger than it should be by virtue of the confusion. But I say again, I'm sorry to be repetitive, this is not where the battle is going to be fought. Not in November.
I guess I see that, what you're saying, in, you know, the big long picture. But I guess what I also want to make people aware of is the effort is only as good as the people who are elected in these positions. The mayor, I look at, you know, Senator Brown, Senator Strauss, and Franklin Garcia, who ran campaigns just like everyone else does when they run for office, spent money, got votes. You know, Senator Brown got 200,000 votes from, you know, the citizens of the city. And
well,
I think that
Michael
was
Brown, how does he feel about the referendum? What does he suggest people do? Michael Brown,
well,
you were on that donation.
I agree with both of you. I agree with you, Mark, that there's no, to say no to this would be disastrous. So we need to hold our nose, maybe, if we don't like the process, but vote yes for it. We need to vote yes for this. Also, you make the very important point that this has no weight all this has done, it's been a PR campaign, and in one sense, it's been very effective because it's gotten us talking about the issue. It's got us, you know, it's gained the attention a little bit of the media, both nationally and locally, and so it's brought the issue up, it's elevated it, but if we don't vote yes, it would be disastrous. Wait a second. And the thing that scares me the most is that in the heyday of the movement, you know, when the movement back in the 1980s, when we had a vote on this issue, 60% of the District of Columbia agreed that we should be a state. 60%.
I have to correct you. The vote was on ratifying the Constitution. It wasn't on voting yes or no on the issue of statehood.
And
you have to be precise. This is not a vote on statehood. It is a vote on the ratifying of a Constitution. And I was there in 93, okay? Nobody on the floor. I was there on the Saturday before the Thanksgiving. And nobody mentioned the vote of the citizens of the District of Columbia. Nobody mentioned, and I listened to every speech intently, talked about the Constitution. It was just a question of, as I said, it was just a symbolic, all right, we'll give them a vote. But nobody whipped the bill. Bill Clinton's congressional liaison actually left before, saw him walking out before the vote took place. So in some ways, this is irrelevant. Everything that the points you've made about education, look, Michael Brown and Paul Strauss and Garcia were all supposed to be paid senators' salaries. That was supposed to increase the stature of the position and make us equal. The council has been terrible about funding. They used to have a statehood subcommittee. That name went away. So the council and the mayor want the perpetuation of the status quo. They don't really want statehood. And this is just, but we have to realize this is just a charade. But don't vote no, but then skip over this after November and move to what is actually required, which is lobbying the bill in the U.S. Congress and getting presidential leadership on the bill. Sorry to keep on making the same point.
Well, no, and we've heard nothing. We've heard nothing from this administration about actually doing that. I mean, there's no plan beyond the November 8th ballot question. In fact, there's very little plan for the November 8th ballot question. But as you point out, this is nothing. It has no force of law. It is nothing more than just another attempt at PR, which is important to us, to get the issue out there. It puts us on the offensive by making a demand, and I think that's a positive thing. But, yeah, it's not like it's going to pass and the people on Capitol Hill are going to say, oh, we didn't know you wanted to stay here.
It's going to have no bearing whatsoever. The issue is invisible on the national political landscape. It does make people talk about it. I'm for anything that raises its visibility, but don't think it is in any way, even an incremental step towards statehood. When Hillary Clinton starts mentioning it in a campaign speech, if she mentions it in her legislative proposals, then I'll take it serious. I stopped Chuck Schumer on the floor of the Philadelphia convention and asked him, Mr. Leader, Harry Reid is leaving, who really would have brought the bill out of committee if Carper had ever moved his own bill. He didn't even want to hear about it. He walked away from me twice. I met with the president of AFSCME, Larry Saunders, who was a D.C. delegate. We've got to get the International Labor Union president involved so that it becomes a legislative proposal.
Well, and that's one of the problems of this approach, where you keep everything so tight to the to the best. We're not getting the unions involved, and they're always important in issues like this. And also things like the clergy. I mean, what civil rights movement in America has moved forward without support in the last 50 years, without support of the clergy? We don't have, we are a central place in Washington for religious denominations. I don't think there's any Christian denomination, for example, that doesn't have a church in the District of Columbia. But yet we don't bring the, we haven't brought the clergy in, we haven't brought organized labor in, we haven't brought the elements of the traditional elements in the district, in the Democratic Party.
We don't even ask. Muriel Bowser and Eleanor Holmes Norton should have been, you were there, Michael, have been working the floor, introducing themselves to people. They're delegates. They can walk on the floor and introducing themselves to everybody and making new friends. Bowser and Norton, this is not hyperbole. This is what I witnessed. They sat in the back of the hall where we were situated, the most democratic jurisdiction, and they didn't move from there. Muriel Bowser didn't leave her seat to talk to people. It was a perfect place to persuade, inform, and educate. So let's not kid ourselves. The effort isn't being made. When she goes and meets with Tom Carper, where the bill would go, and doesn't even bring it up, where he sends out a press release about meeting her and doesn't even mention the statehood issue, I'm not just engaging in invective for itself. These are the facts.
Yeah. Well, Kathleen can tell you, because Kathleen sat next to me, and correct me if I'm wrong here, Kathleen, when we fought with Carper's people in order to testify. They were not going to let us testify.
That's outrageous.
And not one person from the D.C. government had our back on this. And they told us, they said very clearly, look, the mayor and the chairman of the city council are going to testify, and that's enough. And I said to him, but they weren't elected. They weren't elected to do this. How can you have a hearing in the United States Senate and have two people who have the title United States Senators for the District of Columbia and not allow them to testify?
Well, only because we got
100 people to call.
It was more than 100 people, but listen, this is the other problem I have with activists, with organizations, that have been doing this. When I sit there, to be forthcoming, I worked on Michael's campaigns for many years when he's run for this. And he runs it just like John McCain does. He has the same expenses. He has to go through the same loopholes. 200,000 people vote for him. What was Strauss got 180, whatever. Whatever you may think of the person, these people voted for him. Why is there not any respect given by activists, by, whoever is involved in the issue, and by the city council to look at these three representatives, Garcia, Strauss, and Senator Brown, and say, okay, these are the people who they want. The people want these people to go out there and lobby for this effort. Why do they make it so difficult for them to do their job, not give them any money, when they do give them some paltry money? Mendelsohn's over it. He's got last say. The mayor has last say. What is it? Is it that they fear that if they let them do their job, that statehood might go even further?
No, they're worried about competition. They might become important. They might become significant. They might be elevated over these councils. It's a colonial legislature. Eleanor Holmes Norton at that hearing, in the late summer of 2014, the Democrats are in the majority, never asked for a markup of the bill, couldn't produce one other senator. The only senator that came was Tom Coburn, a Republican, who came to speak against the bill. Carper, who introduced the bill, and it went to his committee, when I asked him, did you recruit anybody else to be co-sponsors or to come to the hearing, he didn't respond. So we're being used and we're being abused. And the Washington Post has never properly written that story about what is going on. And the Delegate Norton, I repeat because it bears repetition, when I said, have you gone to the various senators, Senator McCaskill, Senator Tester, who were uncommitted, Senator Heitkamp. She said, and I repeat, she said to me, "You go see." And I reminded her that she was the elected representative. She sat there on her ass for 22 years, and absolutely, a former mayor told me that Maxine Waters told that mayor that in 93 she was actually working against it. This is, you gotta speak truth about this. This is a charade, a facade.
Well, you know, Kathleen, to Kathleen's point, that they haven't put any money into it. One of the things that really bothers me about this is that we've had approximately 7 months to work on this, and 5 months is gone.
Well, Mike,
gone.
When you ask her, are you going to put some money into this, what does she say?
She says she's prohibited. They're looking into it, and they're prohibited from doing it because the government is not allowed to encourage you to vote yes on an issue that's on the ballot. Now, Don Haynes, who's an advisor, I think you know him, Mark,
yes,
used to be with the ACLU, tells me that that's not true. And he's a lawyer, and I'm not a lawyer. I don't know if it's true, but he says it's not true. So what they've done now, I just found this out, what they've done is they put together a committee called Statehood Yes to try to maximize the vote, and they've made George Vandenberg chair of this committee. His wife used to serve on the board of directors of DC Vote, and they've turned, it looks like they're turning the operation over to DC Vote, even though I haven't been briefed yet, so I, you know, this is a little bit of speculation, but I met with DC Vote the other day, and they seem to be heading up what's going to be the PR effort over the next 70 days. It's 70 days.
Yeah, well, let's assume it even wins. Even if it wins, I think we should move on to a different topic, a different epic. Even if it wins, it doesn't mean anything. It's advisory, right, as you said it is. No legal impact, and more importantly, it has no political impact. It's not going to move the leadership to move the bill. If the Democratic Senate, I mean, I think we need to concentrate on the senators. Someone like Carper, it goes to his committee. He supposedly introduced the bill again. Why isn't he for his own bill?
But don't you guys see a connection that DC, that the Hill will turn to you if you guys don't get this referendum passed and say, you know, I think you're going to be very lucky if you do, because I've never seen anything pass if there's been no money or no effort or no education put to it, even if it's as simple as, do you like your dog? You got to put money in to get out the vote. I just firmly believe in that. If you fail this referendum, then that gives Bowser and Eleanor Horton, Norton Holmes that, hey, we did our best. We tried. We look what we did, but it failed. I mean, I think that that's going to be a real problem when you don't put any money. Okay, so the Hill says to you, you people don't even want it. I've asked, and this is a question I like for you to answer, Mr. Plotkin, on what I can say to people. When I talk to people in D.C. who have been raised in D.C., who I would say are probably white males working as lobbyists, say to me, I don't want representation. I had somebody who was a reporter that came out to speak with us from the Washington Times say, I chose D.C. because it doesn't have representation. I don't want it. We're fine without it. What do you say to these guys who live in D.C., pay high taxes, and don't care?
If they want to perceive themselves that way, I don't think you're going to change their opinion. Jesse Jackson, I repeated it. Michael's heard it many times. I said, when will it change? When will the dynamic change? Is when it rises to the level of personal insult. You know, if people are not insulted, if they don't feel, I've lived here 52 years, if they don't feel excluded, if they don't feel diminished, if they don't feel that they're being treated as third-class citizens, I don't think there's anything you can do to change their mind. I think people are in favor, but they just don't want to do anything to move it. That's
right.
I mean, when you have a president of the United States who was elected with 93%, 91%, who carried every precinct in four elections, and he went when there was the budget crisis, and he said to John Boehner, I'll give you D.C. Remember that?
Yeah.
I mean, that is in some way the mentality of the presidential leadership. And then you have a delegate who literally doesn't do anything, doesn't work of the bill, and it's a very revolting Red Skelton series of developments, and the public needs to demand more of this and has to be more visible. Michael Brown, you make the point about protests and why doesn't the president do something? You're absolutely right. I was at that rally. You produced 200 people. We don't have to take you seriously.
Right.
And that's the thing with the president. I'm not quite as harsh a critic of our delegate, Norton, as you are, Mark, or the president, because with the president, I feel that if I was in the White House and I was an advisor and he came to me and said, what should I do? I think I would say to him, look, they can only muster 200 people out of 670,000, Mr. President. They don't even care about it. Don't open this. Don't open this can of worms. Stay away from it. If it reaches a point where the people stand up, and I think that's a big problem for us. We've got to get the people to stand up. You know, I think that people, when you ask them about D.C. statehood, it's like asking them about world peace. Are you for world peace? Well, who says no? I'm not for world peace. But what the hell are you doing for it? And it's the same thing with D.C. Statehood. I think when we say to people, are you for equal rights in D.C., they say absolutely, but they don't do anything about it. And that's the thing. We got to find a way to motivate the people. And that's where Kathleen's comments, I think, are most relevant, is that if we don't spend money to educate them and push them and motivate them, it's not going to happen unless we hit a seminal moment like you've discussed, Mark, where it is raised to the level of an insult. I think that's finally what did it in the late 1950s in Montgomery, Alabama, when those people that rode the buses said, we're paying the same fare, and it's just offensive that we have to sit on the back of the bus and we're not going to do it anymore. I think our movement is stalled until we stand up and say we're not going to sit on the back of the bus anymore.
Well, but you know what, man, I'm sorry to be Debbie Downer, but, you know, I've watched this movement for a long time. I've come in, I've gone out, I lived in D.C. for a long time. I love the place, but as always, you've got career activists, and I love some of these activists, and I think they do good work. But there's got to be, when you pass this referendum, I hope you all get it done, then you're going to have to come together, and you're going to have to think of a new plan, and it's going to have to be where you shake it up, because the same people end up doing the same thing. I mean, D.C. vote, very good group of people, but they didn't get the budget autonomy passed, did they?
No.
Okay, so now she's turning over the effort to them. Now, I gather, is executive director different today than from when budget autonomy, I would assume so, right? Is it a new person?
Well, the person that's the interim executive director is a guy that's always been there, Daniel Solomon, on the board of directors and other things. I think they're looking for...
D.C. vote, wait a second. D.C. vote is an appendage of Eleanor Holmes North. It is not an independent, forceful entity, and that's the problem with that. I mean, don't count on them. They look for her approval and everything. You've got to jump over her.
But this is my what I think is a big problem. If you've got these people who are not really wanting statehood either, then where does your movement go? Because it's got to have an organized effort. It's got to have people all on the same, you know, page. That, you know, I guess, is it more about ego than it is about actually getting it done?
No, I think we have a city council and a mayor that pay lip service. They're not seriously interested. Look at the convention. You had an opportunity, the Democratic convention, to raise the visibility, to do something of behavior that was not normal and not ordinary, to bring attention to yourself. Harrington Dixon who is the national committeeman, has some plan to go sit up at the front of the, and the New York delegation probably would have moved to draw attention for a national audience that a constituency was unhappy with the Democratic Party, and nothing took place. One person spoke about statehood at 4:30 in the afternoon. How ironic. It was Eleanor Holmes Norton, who for 16 years made sure the word was never in the Democratic Party platform.
That is amazing to know that. But what about Jackson? Why? I was surprised that he, since he was the first shadow senator, never said a thing about it when he was up there. Did he, like you said, did anyone even ask him?
Well, Jesse Jackson lives in Chicago. What about the person I called twice, never called me back, from AFSCME, Paul Booth, who was supposed to speak on Hillary's behalf, said District of Columbia on back of the screen, and he never mentioned our status either. So there's a level of timidity and just silence that is overwhelming. Nobody is irritated or insulted. They just play their assigned roles.
Well, and Kathleen was with me at the convention, and as always, Mark, this was not your first convention. As always, where did we sit? We sat with our backs to the wall. You know, we from where we sat, we could see the backs of the heads of people from Guam and the Virgin Islands.
So how did you act on that? What did you do to besides telling the local stations, what action did the delegation take? And then it goes to the councilwoman at large and the chairman, Anita Bonds, who was just there to be a glorified spectator. That convention should have been an opportunity to draw attention. Michael Brown, you have done. You paid for those billboards in Charlotte, but you really need to have done something extraordinary to draw attention to this issue.
Well, we have ideas, Mr. Plotkin. It takes money. And you know, this is my problem. Senator Brown, I've watched him use his money to run these campaigns, and I've seen no money ever for all the work that he does. I mean, I think he's crazy to now have done it so long, but he's so committed to the cause. But, you know, to do those kind of efforts takes money. And he doesn't have, nor should anyone be expected to take money out of their own pocket when they're ran for and got, you know, elected to this position. It's supposed to be paid, and they don't even give him any money to do anything. And actually, where was the money to do something? Didn't Anita Bonds have money to do something?
Well, you know, what we suggested, and this is just, this is never going to happen, but first we wanted to see if we could put them all in at least put them all in statehood t-shirts so that when the mayor stood up and made her pronouncement during the roll call, which she did. She did a good job. I think that the things she said were really written down by Mark Plotkin. God bless you, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, I told her to say what to say. She didn't want to say
right.
it, which is and soon to be the 51st state. She wanted to still say it's a great city. It's not a city.
Oh, my gosh.
I mean, the stuff is beyond belief. Of really what goes on.
But, you know, we need to, at that particular point in time, when the spotlight is on us for a moment at the convention, this doesn't cost anything, we need to stand up and walk out.
What happened with the t-shirt? Yeah, I was all for a walkout.
Right. They still talk today, they still talk about Fannie Lou Hamer, and that convention was 1964?
Yeah.
And the fact that she, when the delegation from Mississippi wouldn't put an African-American on the delegation, she formed her own delegation and showed up at the convention. You know, they still talk about that today. Something like that would have, I think, a dramatic impact, but these guys are afraid to do it. They don't want to rock the boat.
What happened with the t-shirts?
Well, they came up with the idea using three-cornered hats, and we gave them buttons, 51 buttons to put on, you know, our 51 New Columbia buttons to put on the hats, and they put them on all the hats, and then they never distributed them, so nobody wore the hats.
Well,
we
missed an opportunity. Let's move forward. You know,
yes.
I'm gonna have to get off the phone, but unless you want to ask me some other questions, you have allies in Pelosi and Hoyer in the House. That's true. But you need a vote. There should be a strategy. The strategy is you want to vote in the United States Senate. I think the Senate will go Democratic. And I asked Bowser to call Hillary Clinton and say, please say D.C. statehood in the acceptance speech. Did she call her? No. Why didn't she call her? You tell me. So the point is, unless this very simple act of asking on our behalf is not done, there isn't going to be progress. And if the elected leadership won't do it, then other people have to take their place. That's all I can say.
But I would, before you leave, Mr. Plotkin, the one thing that I see is there's this huge gap. Because unless there's money, whoever may it be, unless you put money into effort to pay people to go up there and actually sit outside, make sure they meet everyone, it's a full-time job. Are you saying that people like you or just an individual, this has to be organized. And if the elected officials of D.C. won't put any money into a budget because they're afraid of the
Congress. Well, then I went to a billionaire named Bill Conway. Maybe, Michael, you don't even know this. Advertised he's part of the Carlyle Group. And he unfortunately lives in McLean, Virginia. And he actually advertised, he's worth $3 billion. And he actually advertised in Tom Heath's column that he wants to give $1 billion of it away before he departs from this earth. And he gave me an hour of his time. I went to Doug Jamal. We have to form a separate organization that has no constraints, or as I've said, find somebody who wants to become the Michael Bloomberg of D.C. That is, they want to become a United States Senator, but they don't want to move. He spent $80 million to become mayor of New York City. His own personal ego and vanity push that. But the present elected leadership and the D.C. vote, which is supposedly the organization that is supposed to move this issue, but I don't even know if they're for statehood. They're for voting rights. I don't even know if they're for statehood. The point is, a separate entity that is well-funded, I agree with you, has to be formed that does the real politics that's necessary. Yes.
Well, I agree with you 100%, and on that note, we're going to thank you and we're going to let you go. Thanks so much.
Okay. Thank you
for your perspective. You know so much about this issue, and I hope as it progresses, we can get you back another time.
Well, thank you. I would just leave with 2 points. Make sure there's a vote in the Senate in 2017, because in 2018 is an election. That's what you've got to ask for, and you've got to ask for presidential leadership on this issue. That means speaking about it and actually convincing her to do something about it. So thank you for inviting me.
Thanks, Mark. We'll talk to you again soon.
He's very interesting and he's very right. I mean, I understand why you guys feel that you have to vote yes. I just think it's just a terrible way to do it. It's very undemocratic, and it's hard with this how everyone feels about politicians. Not to say to people, yeah, you're absolutely right. Politicians stink, because when I look at this cause, and when I look at the people that should be voting, your veterans, all those people we know in D.C. should have the right to vote and representation. And I see how this administration, especially city council, it's all about power. I guess it's true. Power corrupts, absolutely, or absolute power corrupts. But, it's such a sham, and it's just such a shame. I'm sorry. There's a lot of activists that I know and love, and I just feel for them because they put so much effort into this, and I just feel that this is so misleading,
Well,
I hope you guys get it.
One thing I will say is that the one thing I don't agree with, Mr. Plotkin, is I think that Mark is a little too harsh on our delegate, only because I think he forgets the fact that Eleanor Holmes Norton needs to function on the Hill. She needs to function on the Hill, and she's done a lot she's just been a great advocate for for programs in the district with no vote. You know how Congress works. You've worked for several members of Congress. So you understand that you come to me and you say, Congressman, I'm willing to give you my vote on this if you're willing to give me your vote on that. And she's got no vote to trade. So she's done things like DC Tag and she's done a lot of things to promote the District of Columbia without a vote. So I think she has to – she can't be an advocate. She can't be an advocate like me or Anish Jenkins or, you know, the people that are out there whose main priority – or Mark Plotkin for statehood. She has to also consider, just like the president, other things. But yes, we all and you know, I think she's constrained by the same thing, that not enough people step up to the plate to have her back. We need to have her back. We need to get up there and we need to say, yes, we're not going to go away. You know, Johnny Barnes, who you know, Kathleen,
yes,
an attorney in Washington, who's a great statehood advocate, often uses the example of the Martin Luther King birthday, that they didn't want to make it a national holiday. And then Stevie Wonder wrote a song, turned out 50,000 people on the West Lawn of the Capitol. And the next day they were lining up to support the idea of a Martin Luther King national holiday. And I think that's what we need. We need 50,000 people on the lawn.
Well,
yeah.
What point that you raised, though, that you talked about, and what Mr. Plotkin did about her going over to the Senate, and you know as well as I know that a member of the House, even as a delegate, is not going to be taken seriously in the Senate. It's that kind of thing. You're not my same level. You guys, you and Strauss, were elected to be the equal over in the Senate. And the City Council, and I think the activists should, you know, truly be behind you guys and demand that you guys be able to do your job. I mean, because that's what you were elected to do. You were elected to go and fight for statehood on the Senate as a U.S. senator from D.C. Am I wrong?
No, you're absolutely right. And the point is the same for me and Paul, is that nobody has our back either, because you sat there. You sat there with me, as those people said, right? That chief of staff said to us, there's two things that I can tell you, that on September whatever, there's going to be a hearing. And the number two thing is you won't be there to testify.
Right.
That's exactly what she said to us. And who got the people to call? Did the city council get the people to call?
No.
You got the people to call.
Exactly.
I got the people to call. Rachel got the people to call. I mean, we banded together to get the people to call.
If we had, and we moved them.
Right.
And if 300 phone calls, because they couldn't do their work because people constantly called and they got really annoyed, if just 300 phone calls could make that change, if people in D.C. would band together and be organized, and I mean, maybe you let the people pass the marijuana referendum. Maybe you go to them and say, what was your model? How do we get people talking? Because to tell you the truth, yes, I understand you have to go to the Senate. He's absolutely right. But you've got to create a buzz, and the movement comes from the bottom, from the grassroots. So maybe you need to get Usher, who wasn't Usher just in D.C., and it was a big deal, and everyone went nuts. And isn't he, like, friendly with Bowser? Why doesn't Usher, Stevie Wonder, why don't you have a concert on the Mall where you're going to have all these big celebrities? Because unfortunately in our society, those are the people that everyone react to. You got to get a celebrity. Maybe political celebrities don't do it, but definitely someone like Usher, who was just there, wasn't he?
Well, first of all, that's why I've got you. You're my celebrity.
Oh, you are in trouble.
And you're letting me down.
You're in trouble.
But yes, he was. And you know, I just sent $700 worth of flowers to John Oliver to say thank you for the piece that he did, because mm-hmm. that little piece that he did, Kathleen, has reached more people than we've been able to reach in the 10 years that I've been doing this. I mean, it just is amazing. You know, and Senator Strauss has an effort out there to involve celebrities.
But it's not,
but,
true,
but,
it, yes, but,
but yeah, But you know what? It's not being supported. It's not being supported locally enough.
Right.
And that's the problem. He can't do it by himself. I can't do it by myself. We need to the people behind us, and we need to get the government behind us. And Mark Plotkin's absolutely right. The only reason they don't support us is they don't want the competition. And you know,
and they don't want you getting national news versus them. You know, I mean, they're lucky. And I know, I see that when, you know, the problem with D.C. is also that you got these people who don't care about local politics. They think it's inept. They think it's corrupt. And I always say to them, well, you know, you make a state, the city is becoming richer every day. And I said, you know, if you feel that way, then make it a statehood, and then maybe you'll get the Colin Powells to run for city council. I mean, you know, and they won't be so corrupt, but to keep it as it is and to allow the city council, especially Phil Mendelson, people like Anita Bonds, and not hold them, their feet to the fire on the statehood is just, you know, I'm not sure. I know Mendelson probably can be very vengeful and stuff like that, but if more people called his office and more people demanded that he put money, I think it should be to the elected officials, you, Strauss and Garcia, to do your job, and then maybe he would do it, because he would, I think that all politicians would give in to pressure. They all do. Yeah. And all you have to do is apply it. But you all have to get together and agree on what approach you're going to do. And you know, that's always hard in any kind of grassroots movement. But, you know, Mr. Plotkin's good. He keeps on saying this ballot is not really the issue, but between that ballot, if it passes, and getting senators to have a bill before, you got a big gap there. And so maybe you got to start thinking of an independent organization funded to do this job, because if you don't do something different, I don't see any change happening, even if you get this ballot, you know, referendum passed.
Well, that's a great segue, because we've started a nonprofit called Statehood Now, Statehood No Other Way Foundation, and we're trying to raise money. Unfortunately, the city has refused to fund us this year. They gave us some funding for a website last year, but I guess I haven't been a good boy this year and been a team player in their opinion, because I've been a critic of this process. And so we didn't receive any money this year, but we're going to try to go out to private sources and keep it going. And yeah, this is a movement that we need to get support from the people, because it's obvious that we're only going to get limited support from the people in charge. And with that, I think we've pretty much run out of time. I want to thank Kathleen Gomez for filling in.
Thank you.
You're always welcome on the show. I hope you come back and give us hell, if nothing
else.
Yes,
well, I will, and I hope you'll have me back before the elections as I come close to explaining why I'm supporting Trump.
I thought that would get you.
Yes.
You know.
So you have to have me back.
But between now and then, I'm going to take whatever money I can collect, and we're going to get you some therapy.
Just think, if you shake it up, that establishment in D.C., and I'll tell you, I mean, when you have conservative Republicans telling me, well, I'm going to vote for Hillary because at least I know the way it is will stay the way it is, I think that's the sure sick sign that we're in trouble.
I got to tell you, if things are not going the way you want at the party, I don't think tossing a stick of dynamite into the middle of the room is the way
to
get...
Then you can change the venue. I go to a better place with better music and better liquor, probably.
All right. Well, on that note, may we all find a better place with better music and better liquor.
We'll
be back next week, and Maria will be back. And thank you, America. We'll see you next week.
In the capital of this nation, 200 years of exploitation. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote.